Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, marking the start of the 87th Iowa General Assembly for the 2018 legislative session. Yes, we are back to Legislative Mondays as the legislature reconvenes in our capital. This hour, we're going to be taking a look at the agenda from both sides, even though, of course, the Republicans still in control of both the House and the Senate, as well as the governor's office. Joining me, as she will be doing on all of these Mondays, Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
And we're going to be joined by lawmakers this hour, Joyce. Later in the hour, State Representative Zach Nunn will be with us. He's the majority whip, a Republican from Bondurant. But first of all, we have State Senator Pam Yoakum, a Democrat from Dubuque, with us. Senator Yoakum, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Ben. It's great to be with you.
And if you'd like to ask Senator Yoakum a question, let her know what your priorities are for lawmakers in Des Moines. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. And as Joyce and I start this conversation, Senator Yoakum, I'd like to play a little bit of audio from the Senate Republican leader, the Senate Majority Leader. This is from a pre-session legislative forum sponsored by the Associated Press to have you react to it there at this forum. Leaders gathered to review their priorities for the session, and here's what Senator Dix identified as his number one priority.
Senate Republicans, message we're hearing from Iowans is very clear. They want us to pick up where we left off last year on making sure that we position Iowa for growth. And as we consider those policies this year, our number one priority is going to hinge on our ability to make sure that we make Iowa a more competitive place to establish and create new career opportunities. Iowans want higher paying careers in this state, allowing for more of our young people to stay here and potentially some of our children and grandchildren to have opportunities to come back to our state, increasing the number of taxpayers and establishing an environment of growth, shining a beacon on Iowa as a great place of opportunity.
Senator Yoakum, Republicans say they hope to cut taxes while also balancing the state budget. One draft proposal would reduce Iowa corporate and individual income taxes, but delay the cuts until future years. Together with that cut from Senator Dix, how are you reacting to how the Republicans are setting the scene here?
Well, thanks for the question. And first of all, let me just say that when I look back at the last legislative session, it was clearly a billionaire Koch brothers and ALEC agenda that the Republicans did behind closed doors and then just dropped on our laps as minority member legislators. So I'm hoping that we are not seeing a repeat of that, that we are much more transparent and that we actually work together this time to try and craft some legislation to deal with tax policy and making a real commitment to what we all claim we believe in, and that is educating our children, making sure our workers are getting the skills they need to get a better paying job, that we really want to deal with water quality in a very constructive way, and the list goes on and on. But certainly, who could ever say we don't want to be a more prosperous state? Of course we do.
Well, what about that actually work together, your phrase there? What would that entail? It means that you didn't feel that way last session. Are you getting indications this session that it will have a different flavor from last session instead of the Republicans simply going about their agenda and Democrats more or less standing on the sidelines?
Well, I will say we certainly made our voices heard. Maybe we couldn't stop the action from happening, but we certainly made our voices heard in the last session. I'm hoping that we are going to work together, but right now I'm not seeing that there is a lot of a lot of outreach to try and get us to work together in subcommittees to try and get some legislation crafted. It's early, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, at least for the next couple of weeks. But I don't think that we ever do good policy, ever solve problems in a constructive way when we ace out, carve out the minority party or even David Johnson as an independent who has been here for years and knows human resources in and out and has been very involved in ag policy and water quality issues. So I am truly hoping that all of the rhetoric and happy talk we heard today is actually going to at least come to some fruition. I will say that we had an administration and rules committee meeting this morning already, and Senator Feenstra is also on that committee. I'm the ranking member for taxes in the Senate, and of course he chairs that committee, and suggested that we bring in the Department of Revenue as well as the Legislative Fiscal Bureau to give the legislators an update on the impact of the federal tax policy and what that will do to our budget and our long-term outlook in terms of budgeting. So we thought that was a good idea. What I will also add to all of that is that if we were really serious about addressing some of these really weighty issues that have been on our plate for a long time, whether it is water quality or making sure our kids are well educated or tax policy, then we needed to be meeting over the interim as legislators and really do the deep dive into those corporate tax credits and some of those other issues to be able to come into session with some real ideas on how to start addressing it. And we just didn't do that either.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any common ground in the area of spending the budget and taxes that you have with the Republicans? Where do you overlap the most?
Right. That's obviously a very good question.
Do you agree, for instance, that their plan to cut income taxes in Iowa, I guess this also ties in with the federal government, the overhaul of taxes there?
Sure. So what we're looking at least at the state level, is that with the federal tax changes, we will actually have a temporary windfall because of federal deductibility. We are one of four states that have federal deductibility, and that means that Iowans get to write off of their state income tax their federal income tax. Mm-hmm. Well, if your federal income tax drops, then you have less of a write-off. Therefore, there'll be people will be paying more in on their state income tax. I'm not sure what the Republicans plan to do with that anomaly. Like I said, we're one of maybe four states that has federal deductibility, but it could be a potential windfall that we could actually use to buy down some of the tax rates. If I have my way, the tax rates would be reduced for those who are really earning less than $100,000 a year, probably even less than that, when you consider that the household median income in Iowa is still around $53,000. So those are the people who most need a tax break, and they in turn will use that money to stimulate the economy. They're the ones that go out and replace that refrigerator that's wearing out, or replace the car, do the home improvements. So they really do spend that money in the local economy that does stimulate it.
So you mentioned tax credits. They've been mentioned as a potential source of revenue to eliminate some of them. Which do you have an idea of which you and other Democrats would, which tax credits you'd like to eliminate?
I don't know if it's as much as eliminate, as much as being able to do the deep dive to really figure out whether or not the taxpayer is getting that return on investment. So when these tax credits were created, and they've been created over many, many years, they were created with good intentions at the time, but now it's time to say, when it was created, what was the purpose of it, and mm-hmm. is that tax credit actually fulfilling that original intent? And we have never spent enough time on the tax committee to really be able to examine that more closely. We had one tax expenditure committee meeting that lasted 2 hours, and that was it. During the interim, I mean, that is not enough time to really do the kind of work you need to do to make a determination if corporate tax credits are really working as they should. Certainly, one tax credit that has been mentioned frequently to do more investigation on is the research and activities supplemental corporate tax credit. In Iowa, we have two research and activities credits, one in the corporate income tax code and one that is administered by the Department of Economic Development or Economic Authority. And I know that second one, the supplemental, is the one that many people have asked whether or not it really is needed, number one. Number two, we now have corporations in this state that we are writing checks out to them because of those credits. And I'm not going to mention them by name on the air, but there are some of our top companies in this state where we are now writing out $10 and $15 million checks to them. So they're basically paying no Iowa corporate income taxes any longer because of the current tax structure.
State Senator Pam Yoakum is with us this first half hour, a Democrat from Dubuque. We're talking on the opening day of the 2018 legislative session. Join our conversation. Let the Senator know what your concerns are, what lawmakers should be putting at the top of their priorities list. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Just as another footnote here, State Representative Zach Nunn, the majority whip for the Republicans, will be on our second half hour. Janine is with us in Iowa City. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Hi, Janine.
Hello.
What's your question for the senator?
I have a concern about that IPERS bill that's kind of lying in wait, and I feel that there's a certain disingenuousness about what Republicans have said about that bill. They're saying we're not going to do anything this year, but the bill, which is suggesting that we go to a defined contribution system in July of 2019, is concerning, and I think the 350,000 people in Iowa who are on IPERS need to know this, and it may have effects, I would imagine, on the future viability of the monies available for those of us that are already on IPERS. And I was wondering where that bill stands and what the Democratic position is on this particular bill, which has not received a lot of publicity.
Thank you, Janine, in Iowa City. Senator Yoakum?
Janine, it's a great question, and I can tell you that I've been on the State Government Committee in the legislature for quite a while now, and so the public pension systems are part of our jurisdiction. The bills have been introduced. Whether or not they're going to move this year or not, I do not know at this point. I'm hearing both ways. What I will tell you is that the Democrats are going to resist that with everything we have. You already mentioned 350,000 Iowans are on the IPERS retirement system, and it puts about $1 billion a year into Iowa's economy. That's a lot of money into the Iowa economy from Iowa's retirees. What basically would happen is that they would be setting up a parallel system to the current system so that new employees, new state employees, would go into a 401k system, like you said, a defined contribution plan, and that means that those who are in the existing plan, a defined benefit plan, eventually, if you don't have new workers coming into the same system, that system is going to eventually collapse. I don't know how long that will take, but eventually it will collapse. You have to have new employees coming into that system and continue paying into it in order to maintain its viability. So I can tell you that as one legislator, I will do everything I can to maintain the IPERS system, as well as the other three public pension systems for police and fire protection. That's the 411, the judicial pension system, and then, of course, the other one is for our state troopers. So we have four different state pension systems, and IPERS, of course, is the largest one, and we will do everything we can to protect that and retirement security for Iowa's retirees.
State Senator Pam Yoakum is with us this half hour, Democrat from Dubuque, as we open this 2018 legislative session. Senator Yoakum, let's hear some words from the governor. Governor Reynolds, of course, with the condition of the state address tomorrow. We'll find out more details than we have thus far. By the way, that will be aired live here on Iowa Public Radio beginning at 10 o'clock. And Charity Nebbe will be joined also by Chris Larimer tomorrow. And also, Joyce, you'll be there as well to pick apart a little bit of analysis on on Governor Reynolds. But Governor Reynolds outlined four main priorities for the legislative session: making Iowa's business climate more competitive, developing the most innovative energy policy in the country, the third, K-12 education, and then also training Iowa's workforce for the jobs of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. However, here's a little audio from her. She says health care, including mental health, needs to be addressed.
And we're continuing to look on ways that we can enhance and provide a modernized, coordinated, patient-centered health care delivery system, whether that's providing affordable health care, making sure that we're providing vulnerable Iowans the services that they deserve, access and quality services through managed care, or making sure that we have a mental health system that meets the needs of families and individuals suffering from mental health.
Okay, so talk about that. How do we make all Iowans have access to mental health services they need wherever they live?
Well, we have actually been trying to work on that for a number of years. I will tell you, during the interim, there was a task force that was comprised of law enforcement, providers of mental health services, people in corrections, and of course, people with a mental illness, who all served together, and they met six different times from August through December, and they've come up with a whole set of recommendations for the legislature to consider in this coming legislative session. You know that we did attempt to do some reforms with the mental health system, and there's a lot of work still to be done with that, because it's, although it's no longer county by county, we do have regions now, and we've attempted to address some problems within those regions, but it still comes down to that our health insurance policies actually address and consider an illness of the brain no different than our policies consider any other organ that has an illness. Now, the Affordable Care Act under President Obama did strip away some of that stigma and did, of course, say no longer can insurance companies discriminate on the basis of a pre-existing condition, and they did some things with mental health parity. But we still have a long way to go. It's going to take an influx of funding from the state in order to make that happen. And I will say, in terms of the Medicaid system, what many of us keep forgetting is back in the mid-90s, then Governor Branstad and then Chuck Palmer, who was the director of the Department of Human Services at that time, privatized Iowa's mental health system, the Medicaid mental health system. They hired first, it was a company called Medco, who was bought out by Merit, that was bought out by Magellan. And the promise then, in the mid-1990s, when we privatized the Medicaid mental health system, was that it was going to do all the things that Governor Reynolds just said, including creating more services at the local level.
Okay.
Well, didn't happen.
Senator Yocum, we have about...
So here we are.
We have about 5 minutes. The time has slipped away much too quickly. About 5 minutes left in our conversation. Let's make sure we get some more listeners in with their comments and questions. Chris is with us in Des Moines. Coming up on a break, Chris, I have to ask you to be brief, but we're so glad to have you on the program. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'll be real quick. My question is, we have an Iowa State Patrol agency. When it comes to dealing with racial profiling, this agency does the wrong type of investigations. What will the House and Senate do to correct that? Because it is a total disservice when it comes to people of color. That's why they are still able to get away with racial profiling, because they do the wrong type of, it's not even the right type of investigations that they do, and they're able to continuously get away with racial profiling, which does people of color a total, total disservice, and it continues on the racism, discrimination that is just getting crazy today. But thank you.
Thank you, Chris in Des Moines. Senator Yocum.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. So certainly I don't think any of us would say that we would support racial profiling. And I would suggest that perhaps the Judiciary Committee and some of the others that deal with corrections and law enforcement need to address that issue very upfront. Bring in the director of the Department of Public Safety and others to find out what is really going on and why. I find it disturbing that we have a caller that says that they're doing the wrong investigations and there's racial profiling. So that to me is very troubling.
Mm-hmm. There was a bill in the House last year, but it was too late in the session to really take up. But it was a bill to ban racial profiling. Iowa is, I believe, we're in the minority among states who don't specifically ban racial profiling. It's the top priority of the NAACP. They're doing some very interesting research on it, illustrating the depth of the problem. When their bill, you know, sort of ran up against the deadlines at the end last year, they had hoped for an interim committee, and that did not happen. But I'm sure they'll be back pushing for a racial profiling bill this year.
Okay, this will have to be our last listener call for State Senator Yoakum. Let's go to Ed in Agency. Hi, Ed. I have to ask you to make it quick. Thanks for being on.
Yes, sir. I'll be very quickly. Two little quick questions. You kind of touched on one about insurance in Iowa. So I'd like you to do whatever you can to make sure we get affordable insurance in Iowa. The second thing is the can and bottle bill. I'd like to see you take the bottle deposit to 10 cents. I understand the grocery stores don't want all the garbage in the stores. I understand that. But I'd like to see the bottle deposit go to 10 cents, and I'd like you to see it to include all the other little drinks that they have figured out a way to get around now, like the sodas and blah, blah, blah.
To expand it.
Right, right. We have
absolutely.
Okay, Ed.
Please,
I'm about to cut you off.
Please don't. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we have this curious thing, Senator, where non-carbonated drinks do not need a deposit, right? That's just weird, right? I don't know if other states have that. But okay, we have about a minute left. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is what I can tell you, is that already during Governor Culver's administration, he had actually initially proposed increasing the deposit and expanding it to include more beverage containers. And I was served in the House at the time, and our switchboard crashed. There was such a volume of phone calls coming in, and they were opposed to increasing the deposit and expanding it any further. What we do need to do is keep calm heads about this and really take a really strong look at the proposals being made by both sides on this issue, and we need to decide whether or not we need to take this state to the next level of recycling in our state. And I believe it's time to take the next step for recycling.
Mm-hmm. Before we go for 20 seconds on water quality, do you see a common approach there with the Republicans?
Well, the House and Senate have different bills. I have been a long advocate since 2010, when the voters went to the polls and cast a vote in support of creating the Iowa Land Legacy Fund, constitutionally protected, and then also said raise sales tax 3/8 of a penny to fund it, which would have been about $150 million a year. It's a $4 billion problem, and that would have begun to address that the water quality issue in this state in a very constructive, meaningful way. Mm-hmm. So that's what I support, and that's why I voted for in committee in the past.
Okay, thank you very much. State Senator Pam Yoakum for joining us from the State House Law Library, Democrat from Dubuque. Thank you very much for stepping in, Senator Yoakum.
You.
When we come back, State Representative Zach Nunn will be with us on the from the Republicans' perspective on this opening day of the Iowa Legislature 2018. Ben Kiefer with Joyce Russell. Zach Nunn, the majority whip for the Republicans in the House. We welcome your questions as we did this half hour. What do you have for priorities for this legislative session? 1-866-780-9100. Ben Kiefer with Joyce Russell, back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio's Statehouse correspondent at the Statehouse Law Library. There, we're inviting a couple of lawmakers on to be with us. State Senator Pam Yoakum, Democrat, in our first half hour. This half hour, we're welcoming State Representative Zach Nunn, Majority Whip from Bondurant. Representative Nunn, thank you for stepping into our studio, our booth.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Joyce, for having me today.
We have a caller as a question about taxes, but first of all, let's have your opening sort of the idea behind the tax cuts and number one priority here. Is it a good time to talk about tax cuts when you're likely to have to make cuts to this year's budget because of a shortfall in revenue?
Right, Ben. Well, I think the federal government's tax change has made it implicit that we do talk about tax cuts in Iowa. The worst thing we can do for Iowa families at this point is to have two incongruent tax systems at the federal level and then also at the state level. So it also opens the opportunity to talk about how do we do smart tax reform, not just for Iowa's families, but making it a better place for families to want to live and work. And that comes about with reevaluating how we do our state income tax. Iowa's right now one of the highest in the country, led primarily by California, but we're ahead of New York and New Jersey. That's not the place we want to be for families who want to come and set up shop here. Additionally, we want to look at tax reform to make sure that we're competitive with our near peers. Iowa right now is the third best managed state in the country. That's a very good thing, but there's also an opportunity to not just bring new businesses to Iowa, but to keep that small and medium business here and investing. And we can't do that when our corporate tax is the absolute worst in the state right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to our callers. Nick is with us in Des Moines. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. Again, State Representative Zach Nunn is with us this half hour for your questions or comments. 1-866-780-9100. Nick in Des Moines, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you very much for taking my phone call this afternoon. I guess kind of to jump into the tax question, the one thing that concerns me as I look at it is we saw that Kansas had a massive tax cut on the idea that they were going to experience a major economic growth, and so it seems as if we're almost shooting ourselves in the foot as if we want to cut our own taxes as we've had to take $50 million out of the reserve. So I was wondering what kind of statistical evidence or what you're hoping to bring to the table so that we don't really see what happened to Kansas happen to our state and drop us from that ranking of third best managed as a kind of a big fear of my own.
Nick, thank you. In Des Moines.
Nick, no, you hit on a very good point here. I think an aspect of it is that in the Kansas model, what they did is they cut taxes but continue to increase spending. Here in Iowa, we have been much more efficient in how we've identified how our budget works, and if we're going to spend anything, whether that be returning tax dollars back to the taxpayer, we need to make sure that we're spending at an appropriate amount. I believe that here in Iowa, it's not a matter of a spending issue, or it's more a matter of a spending issue than it is a revenue issue. We have good revenue coming into the state, and we've continued to see that. Two things that I think you bring up on statistical importance. The first is that here in Iowa, we have one of the lowest debt ratios of all states in the country. In fact, one of the smallest in the U.S., we carry about just 26%, whereas the average state debt is about 52%. So Iowa's done a really good job on that path. The other aspect that we need to identify is where are we best investing dollars? And I think that we've highlighted it, and I would actually agree with Senator Yoakum here, is that we need to get more money coming back from the federal government back into taxpayers' pockets so that they're the ones stimulating the economy. We're not trying to drive it from the top up with the government. Now, there are a couple of areas. Obviously, we want to continue to ensure are funded appropriately so we don't end up like Kansas. That would be in education. That would be in critical infrastructure. But we also don't want to be in a situation like another state, Illinois, which has continued to increase taxes and has one of the worst debts in the entire nation. And has some of the worst public services as a result of it. So it can absolutely be said on both sides.
Let's move on to mental health. Our time is short, of course. We've got about 15 minutes left. A December poll, Iowa poll, Representative Nunn, this was by the Des Moines Register, shows nearly two-thirds of Iowans disapprove of how state leaders are handling mental health care in Iowa. Minority Leader, your colleague, Democratic Representative Mark Smith, laid out the situation as he sees it at a pre-session legislative forum. Let's listen.
Many of our community providers right now are teetering on the edge because of this damn mess with managed care and lack of reimbursement to providers to provide these services. This is a tragedy because we are at a level here in provision of services at a time when the research, the riddles of the brain are being released, and we're finding more ways to treat conditions than ever before. We've got to stop that gap.
Okay, so what can Iowa lawmakers do? What can you do to expand the number of psychiatric beds, psychiatrists available around the state to improve access for Iowans in this mental health crisis?
Ben, I think this is one of the biggest challenges that we have in the state, and I think it's the absolute right conversation to be having. Now, what I'll say is that I respectfully disagree with the minority leader here. He's offering, in my opinion, a 19th century solution to a 21st century problem. Putting more people in institutions is not the way to go, particularly for rural Iowa. So let me offer a couple of solutions here. One, I'd like to see more community-based mental health services. Psychiatrists, physicians, nurses who can get out to the homes of individuals who need it most as opposed to bring them into an institution for long-term care.
And funding to go along with that.
Right, absolutely. So let me offer two things here. The first is that over the last few years, we've spent more than $2 billion on Iowa's mental health system, and that's afforded us, since Governor Branstad first came in, 150,000 more Iowans receiving mental health care than they did in 2011. Importantly, in this past year, we've invested $4 million to create three new medical residency programs in the state, as was highlighted by both the minority leader and yourself, and I think a number of people out the state. It's not just an issue of creating more beds, but who are the medical providers who can assist those individuals when they need it most, whether that's in the home or at the hospital? And I'm very proud of the work that's been done in both Broadlands to bring on a residency program for psychiatrists, as well as in two other institutions throughout the state to bring in psychiatrists who not only are going to go to school here, but then will be doing work throughout the state, particularly in our rural communities.
Mm-hmm. Representative Nunn, in the Senate, Senator Dix, in one of these early pre-session legislative forums, said that improved mental health services is on the must-do list for a number of Republican senators, but he went on to say that that doesn't have to mean more funding, that things can be done without putting more money into it. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'd like to take a broad approach on this. I think that funding is certainly a critical aspect of this, but also where I think Director Foxhoven, who came into DHS just this summer, has done a very full scope review of identifying where DHS can better maximize its dollars by working with other agencies in the state. We had a situation in my community where it was actually the school district who first identified that a student needed additional services. We've had a number of cases, I'm a veteran, where we have homeless veterans on the street who can't get into a psychiatry physician after hours, but it's law enforcement who are able to take them to a shelter and assist them with that. So as opposed to just putting all the pressure on DHS to solve all mental health in Iowa, I would say that it's much broader than that. And that's an area where I do believe that both Republicans and Democrats agree. We have a lot of resources in the state. Let's identify where we can best apply that for mental health aid.
Okay, let's move on in the time we have. Just to remind our listeners, State Representative Zach Nunn is with us this half hour, Majority Whip in the Iowa House, a Republican from Bondurant. If you'd like to join our conversation with your question, what are your priorities? What would you put at number one in your list? Has it been mentioned yet this half hour? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's keep with the issue of health care, Medicaid. I guess, would you agree, Representative Nunn, and we hear it when we do shows on the switch over to privately managed to Medicaid here in Iowa. Seems pretty clear that some changes are needed to the private management of Medicaid. What changes are needed, in your opinion, and in the opinion of other Republicans in the House?
Right, and I will speak for myself. I receive this as a top issue whenever I'm talking to constituents in my district. I've had literally dozens of folks who have come and navigated through the process. It's been difficult, it's been frustrating, and it's been unfair to them. Now, I will like to say that every time that I've gotten involved, we've met with general success in being able to get them the services that they deserve and need. That shouldn't have to happen. You shouldn't have to come to talk to your state legislator to make this work. So last year we had an unprecedented level of oversight going into this transition. It was done without the state legislature's direct involvement, but now we have a responsibility to make sure that it's working. Certainly going back to the old system was untenable, it was very expensive, and it was drowning out our other key services, primarily K-12 education. So we don't want to go back to that model, but we do need to have a model that is responsive to a patient when they need help most and for their long-term or acute care. I think that this is an area where the legislature has been leading last session. I fully suspect that we'll be going into more depth this session on oversight. And I'm interested to hear also what the governor and DHS's plans are for Medicaid in the coming year.
You have no specific ideas about how this can be improved, the private management of Medicaid, now that...
Sorry, man, if it didn't come across, yeah, absolutely. The number of oversight that we've done so that we are checking this, we've got an ombudsman's office in there, as I've highlighted. All of us in the legislature have taken it very keenly to go out there and find out what gaps there are and then get those corrected. Okay. And I credit Foxhoven. He has made a lot of changes in a short period of time. He's been on the job less than 6 months. And has it been rocky? Absolutely. And so have there been challenges?
Right.
Yeah.
You're still in assessing right now, is the message right now, rather than having specific solutions. Let's go to Bruce. Please comment. Sorry.
And the other side, too, is I would say before we just start throwing out more money or more solution suggestions, before we actually know what the battle space looks like, it's a potential that we're going to make it worse. So before we go in there and try and change everything up, before we actually know where we are, what we don't want to do, particularly with the changes on the federal level, is actually make things worse and more confusing for the patient on the ground.
Okay, let's go to Bruce in Iowa City. Bruce is joining us with State Representative Zach Nunn for the final 10 minutes or so of the show. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Hi, Ben. Hi, Representative Nunn. I'm for the aggressive support of K-12 schools in terms of channeling resources into these very difficult spaces in which teachers and students work, especially in the inner cities of Des Moines, for example, and other places. And I'm very concerned, though, that voucher programs are going to – I'm wondering, really, what the status of voucher programs are in terms of legislative action. And I'm very worried about vouchers enabling parents and their children to carry this money into private areas. I'm thinking charter schools that are public may have potentialities for improving the situation, for example, in the poorer districts of Des Moines. But I'm very, very concerned about this money being taken, for example, to private religious schools. I don't think that's not in the public interest. It's not in the public good. It's a kind of a rugged individualism where parents take public money and put it into religious education, which I think is a violation of the Second Amendment.
Okay.
So I'm very interested. Let me finish, please. And so I really, really think vouchers need to be looked at very, very carefully, and they are not going to be good for public education. And I hope the representative who is talking about K-12 education is talking about public schools and very strategically.
We've got your point, Bruce, a couple times over. Let's get a reaction. Thank you, Representative Nunn.
Bruce, you're talking to an issue that's very near and dear to my heart. My father spent almost 30 years working at North High right here in Des Moines, so that's good. And I started off as a history teacher. Didn't make it, so I had to go and actually do a less impressive job working up here at the State House. But let me get to your point on where we are with vouchers. Right now, the state budget is roughly $37 million that we need to be able to identify efficiencies on. Coming up with new programs this year of any kind that don't have a direct service back to the critical infrastructure of the state, I think are probably not something that's on the table. I want to say this, though, as well. House Republicans and House Democrats have made a consistent investment in our K-12 public education, and I think that's a really good thing here in Iowa. Right now, we're at $3.2 billion invested just in K-12. That's over 45% of the entire state budget. We did $40 million last year. And I think the important thing here is that getting dollars into the classroom becomes so important. That's where I'm very happy about the $180 million that went to teacher leadership to be able to help our best and brightest teachers. Additionally, we've given public schools a huge hand up by providing them greater local control so they can really identify where those dollars are best met. You talk about inner city schools. We have Waterloo right now, which as a result of the collective bargaining agreement last year, had greater flexibility with their own local dollars to invest in special needs classrooms. And we're paying special needs teachers appropriate and better because it's such a high demand for that individual educator. Additionally, I want to highlight that, you know, this has been a successful complement to Iowans. We have the highest graduation rate in the state right now, 90%. And that's at our K-12 schools, but it's also at our private schools. So these have been complementary to each other. I love our public schools, but I hate when people try and pit our parochial, our charter, our homeschool, and our public schools against each other, because I think they each serve a very important need for parents, for students, and for communities to be successful.
The voucher system that our caller is referring to is a bill that was offered last year for educational savings accounts, where the $6,000 or so per pupil dollars that the state gives to public schools per pupil would have instead gone to individuals, to families, mm-hmm. Whether they had their children in private school or had their children being schooled at home. I think there is a pretty good consensus that there isn't enough money there to do that, although Representative Walt Rogers, who's one of the main backers of this or one of the main supporters, is offering some variations on that that he has said he hopes to get through this year.
Right, and Chairman Rogers, I think, has come up with some pretty creative ideas that are exciting. Last year, I and actually Senator Janet Peterson, the new minority leader, put together a bill that would allow 529 so that students in schools, whether it be public or private, could start saving for a public or private college program after they graduated. So looking at a 529 style program where families could start saving early on to be able to use that money to go to either college or potentially if they wanted to go to a private high school. I think that that's something that bears merit and we should discuss, but ultimately this is families using their money to be able to go to a school of their choice. And school choice is always going to be important, not just to our caucus, but I think to most Iowans.
In the remaining 5 minutes with State Representative Zach Nunn, I'd like to squeeze in, have you spend a few words, if you could, Representative, on water quality, a big issue in the state. I think the Republicans, even the governor, has said that's a top priority. House and Senate bills on water quality existing, do you see big differences? Do you see how they can be reconciled?
Ben, I think this needs to be the number one priority that we're talking about this session across the board. For water quality in the House, we passed a bill in 2016 that I thought was good and provided a framework for how we would both have a sustainable funding source for water quality, and we'd also have a structure that we could operate on. In 2017, the House came back and put some more meat on the bones and came up with some really good ideas. But we also identified, you know, water quality in Iowa is a generational issue and that we shouldn't rush it through in one session just to say that we were able to check a box and get it done. This session, I am excited to be working with both chambers and both parties to be able to come up with good recommendations and incorporate that into a bill which is going to be meaningful. It can't be understated enough. In the last session, despite all the partisan rancor that might end up in an editorial page, more than 88% of the bills we passed at the State House were bipartisan and signed by the governor. I think that we have the ability to have that same conversation on water quality that is meaningful, that's purposeful, and really drives where water quality can be best implemented.
What do you mean by meaningful? Do you judge meaningful by the number of efforts being put in place by farmers, or by the cleanliness of the water, which is actually the measure we're all looking at, right?
Right. Absolutely. No, I think that it's absolutely. First of all, it's both. We got to be able to look at it from both the rural side of where we've made investments in water mitigation, water strategies, everything from buffer strips to clean water, to point source pollution that happens right here in the urban area. So runoff water from streets, sewer, those all need to be incorporated into a funding structure. Now, I will say that my biggest priority is to ensure that we have a viable funding structure, not a one-off funding structure that looks good for the first year. So we've been able to do that through a metered water tax that currently goes into the general revenue, that we would say, hey, if people are going to pay tax on drinking water, which, by the way, I hate, but if we're going to have this tax, then we need to make sure that it's going to actually cleaning up the water for sustainable long-term water quality. The final piece I'll add is that in order for water quality to be not just the purification of water, but to be able to help, whether it's downstream or right here in the state, we got to be able to ensure that our public-private partnerships that have already worked in a number of rural communities are being disseminated across the state, because there's a number of farmers who are doing the right thing. So on the last piece, there comes to the enforcement aspect of this. Most of these are voluntary, but when there is a violator that's out there that's polluting, they need to be held accountable and actually charged for what they're doing, as opposed to everybody else working really hard to clean our water, and then we have a few bad actors out there that can literally ruin the pot.
Speaking of accountability, that's really, as I understand it, the main difference between the House bill and the Senate bill. At least backers of the House bill have said that their bill has more accountability in it. There's more in there to make sure that these dollars are targeted. They're right. Targeted to a watershed. They will criticize the Senate bill for saying it's too scattershot, leaves it up too much to the individual farmer.
Yeah.
So do you back your House approach?
Absolutely. I think I want to say that we're going to have a conversation with both sides. This isn't a Senate bill or House bill. Well, hopefully this comes up as an Iowan bill. I do think that the House has a very good accountability program involved. And I think that there are things that we are learning primarily from farmers who have been doing this very well for several years as a best practice. The other aspect I'd like to see in this is that we actually have not just the measurement and accountability, but we have something reported back to the legislature on what we're doing. That helps us drive better policy in the long run, and it prevents us from getting into a situation where we did it 1 year and now we never hear about water quality again.
We have, I can give you 30 seconds. I have one last final question for you. I'm going to squeeze in
thanks,
as much
Ben.
As possible
yeah. Yes,
here.
Absolutely.
Of course, 2018, we're now in an election year. Midterms, we have what by polls measure is the most unpopular president, modern president, after 1 year in office. Any concern that some of this discontent with the president, who is also a Republican, will trickle down to impact state races?
Well, let me first say, as a military officer, I will make no comment on the commander-in-chief because I'm legally not allowed to, but I will also highlight the fact here that we have one of the best-run states in the country right now. And so in Iowa, when people look to their legislative leaders, they don't see it being as partisan, as divided as what might be happening on the federal level. You're able to sit down like we did last year on sentencing reform and work with a Democrat across the aisle and pass good legislation that saves taxpayers' dollars and also helps people move on with their life.
In a word, you don't see constituents having any connection with Washington?
Not in my district. They've been very good to be able to differentiate. Iowa's voters are pretty educated. I think they'll know what's best for them.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you so much for coming in. State Representative Zach Nunn, Majority Whip, a Republican from Bondurant. Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell. And I will be back next Monday with another Legislative Monday. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Ben Sandin, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Help today from John Pemble. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.